Drop us an email to comments@fsrn.org. That's comments@fsrn.org. This newscast is produced by Monica Lopez and Tina Gysi. Our headlines editor is Shannon Young. Leanne Caldwell is our Washington, D.C. editor. Our technical production team at KPFA in Berkeley includes Puck Lowe and Rose Katapchi. From KPFK in L.A., I'm Aura Bogado.
And you're listening to radio station WBAI New York, where it's 7 o'clock, time once again for Off the Hook. Everybody, the program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening. Joined tonight by Mike.
Hi.
And look, there's not Kevin on the other side of the room.
Hello.
Is that Arseny I see?
Hello, world.
How have you been?
Good. So, Mike, it worked.
Good.
I'm glad. You guys want to settle that outside?
Or no, it's all settled now. There's,
continue
there's
with
no,
the
no
show.
Further settling to be done.
Good. Okay. Well, I'm glad it's working, whatever it is. Hey, Lexicon's joining us tonight. How you doing?
Hello.
How are
Very
you?
Good.
And down there in Philadelphia is Bernie S.
Greetings from Philadelphia.
And this is, I guess we're on the eve of Nauticon. I think we're all going to Nauticon. No, actually, you're not going.
No, I'm not going.
Okay. And you're not going, Lexicon, are you?
I'm going.
Oh, you are going. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. So everybody in this room except for Arseny is going.
And I'm going.
And, of course, and Bernie is going, too.
Yes.
Now, you guys are actually going to fly your own airplane over there, right? I'm taking a commercial aircraft myself, but you're taking a private little
we're
thing.
We're just sick and tired of dealing with this whole Transportation Security Agency nonsense. We just want to bypass it and just fly there directly. Because the 2 hours we're going to spend going through security is about how long it's going to take us to fly there. So why not just fly yourselves?
Well, now that's an interesting point you bring up. You're saying that you don't have to go through any kind of security check whatsoever to get onto a private plane and just shoot yourself up into the sky.
That's right.
Interesting.
So this comes down to a matter of wealth, even though I'm not a wealthy person by any means. It just so happens that Redbird is a skilled private pilot who's instrument flight rated.
Yeah, and where is he exactly right now? He's supposed to be here. I don't see him.
Probably flying.
Traffic. He's probably out drinking somewhere.
He's probably practicing.
Oh, my God. How am I going to fly this thing to Cleveland tomorrow?
So I flew with Redbird the other week, and it's actually interesting flying with, you know, like just a human, not like some random guy in a cockpit.
You give him a lot of credit.
Yeah, and it's really interesting. He has, like, all these checklists and stuff. And the cell phones are actually very annoying, so turn them off when you're flying.
Not just GSM or CDMA as well?
No, I think it was GSM, and, like, it was really loud and annoying. Because, you know, you got to sit with headphones in the plane, or else you can't hear each other.
And it's your phone causing the interference, right?
As actually, it was Redbird's, which is funny.
Cause it's his own phone.
He was the pilot, but, yeah.
I'll be reprimanded himself for that. So you flew out to Block Island.
Yeah,
right?
We flew out to Block Island, which is an island, like, it's part of Rhode Island, I guess.
And I learned something this week when you told me this, when he told me this, that I thought Block Island was part of Long Island. I thought we owned it, but apparently not. Apparently it's part of Rhode Island.
Look, it's called Rhode Island. It needs to own at least one island.
Well, yeah, but it's not even an island. Let's not even get into
it. It needs
that.
To own some islands. Or
not even a block. Long Island at least is an island. But Block
There's
Island,
no road.
I always thought Block Island was part of us, and apparently not.
I don't know. I mean, it was fun. You just go there. They don't really have a lot there. But apparently when it's the season, the place is packed. And that's what all the locals were telling us. But I got to admit, we went to a cafe, and we paid, like, not New York prices for, like, a burrito, and it was massive.
But you had to change your money to Block Island money, right?
No.
No?
No, it didn't have that.
American money there.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good, I guess. That's good. Well, so there you go. Somebody has flown with Redbird, and you guys, any butterflies on the eve of your departure?
A little bit.
Okay. Yeah, I would too. Definitely. Definitely. But, well, I guess it'll be a race, a commercial aircraft versus Redbird Airlines. All right.
We'll call just before we arrive in Cleveland so you guys can come out and watch us buzz you.
Yeah, because the airport is...
Airstrip is right next to the hotel.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's right, and the airport I'm coming into is not right next to the hotel. It's a regular airport, but you guys have some kind of, like, landing strip, and we can actually see you from the hotel. So I don't know how you can communicate it to me, but if somehow you can let me know, I'll make sure there's a crowd out there waiting and jumping up and down when
you guys
land. We'll
try to drop something on you.
Well, don't make us throw something back, because we will.
Okay.
Now we had some fun last couple of days, and I guess it's time to come clean and calm everybody down because there certainly are a lot of concerned people out there. But basically, we had, as is our tradition, a special event happening on April 1st, this time though, we kind of surprised people because we didn't have it happen on April 1st proper. Actually, let me get to the first part that was different. We didn't have it on the 2600 website proper. We had it on the Hope website, hope.net, which is the website for Hackers on Planet Earth, our upcoming conference, the conference we've had since 1994. And we didn't have it on April 1st proper. We had it when April 1st began in New Zealand. And do you know when April 1st actually begins, the first place in the world that actually begins, what time it is here? It's 6 in the morning on March 31st. That's how far in advance April 1st begins. So we were able to make this change to the Hope.net website that far in advance, and it threw a lot of people off. It threw a lot of people off because they didn't realize it was April 1st, but it technically was. So if it ever comes to like a courtroom hearing or something like that, we can say legally that it was an April Fool's joke, even though it appeared to be March 31st here. And what we did was, we prepared this weeks in advance, somewhat crudely, because people who know anything about the internet were able to figure out that this wasn't actually happening. But we were able to change the domain registration for hope.net. What did we do, Mike? We anonymized it.
Well, you did it, so you should know.
You hit the button.
No, I was not involved in any button getting.
I've got film. Okay, so we went to Network Solutions. And we said we want to make this a private registration, which means that basically their address shows up rather than the address of the registrant. And then we simply changed a couple of key names. And if you typed in those names and looked on Google, you saw they were affiliated with the Barack Obama campaign. And then we started to spread the word via various Usenet news groups and other news groups.
Wait, Usenet?
Yeah, well, you know, people do read Usenet.
Who reads Usenet?
A lot of people, believe me. Yeah, huh. It's incredible because you post something, for instance, alt.politics, you post something there, and you have a response inside 5 minutes from somebody. And usually it turns into racism pretty quickly. But before that happens, you have some kind of a conversation going. Word spreads out. It gets around. So we basically just started releasing information about various not so important things involving the Obama campaign. But at the bottom of each message, we would say, the official website is www.hope.net because Barack Obama stands for hope for change, actually. And so we were able to get that kind of spread around. And then what happened Monday morning, as soon as April 1st rolled around, the Obama quote-unquote site got hacked. And all the people going to that site, thinking they were going to go to Barack Obama's real site, saw a message there. What did the message actually say? Spread the word. Barack Obama has no security on his website. Will his administration have no security? That's the kind of thing that that you might think somebody would say who would want to hack his website. And then, of course, it forwarded to Hillary Clinton's website after that. Now, that caused all sorts of stirs, but it really took off when some bloggers got a hold of this and posted Obama site hacked? Question mark. Yeah. The word kind of spread around from there. I was watching the hits. I was watching the hits on the website, and it went up tenfold inside of 15 minutes as soon as that happened. And we just started seeing all kinds of comments being passed around. Here's something from a site called The American Mind. The nastiness in the Democratic race has reached cyberspace. The Obama campaign bought Hope.net. Now, we never said they bought Hope.net, but this is somehow what got around. They bought Hope.net, only to have some hackers vandalize the page and add links to Senator Clinton's website. Where it says, paid for Obama by America, it reads, and hacked by Zhuang Ji, and that turns out to be the name of an anarchist from like a very long time ago in China. Some people actually looked that up and got the reference. A quick Google search found nothing about a hacker with that name, though. The audacity of him. Don't they know Obama will bring us peace, love, and harmony? And that's a kind of comment that got passed around via various blogospheres. It even made it to a TV station site. I guess if I have that one in front of me. Not actually the TV station itself, I don't think, but a TV station site over in North Dakota. Let's see.
I heard it while you're looking that up, Emmanuel. Yeah. I heard it on KYW News Radio here at 1060 AM here in Philadelphia.
You heard it on the radio?
I heard it on KYW 1060.
You can't. Well, this is the first I'm hearing of this.
I didn't post it, but I did hear that.
Wow. So it actually,
all around my neighborhood in Philadelphia, is our Barack Obama campaign posters that simply have a stylized sketch of him with the word hope under it. So that's the ad word that they're using most in their campaign, the Obama campaign. So it stands to reason a lot of people believe that hope.net was naturally must be registered by the Obama campaign.
Well, it's incredible how quickly you can spread disinformation around, because when someone tries to get the truth, and people were pretty good at this. They were saying, well, look, this was part of a hacker site. If you look at archive.org, and people were actually doing this, they were looking it up and finding references to hackers on planet Earth and realizing that this was a hacker site, so therefore it has to be fake. But then all you have to do is post as somebody else saying, well, yeah, but if that's the case, how come Barack Obama's advertisements on television in Pennsylvania for the primary have that website listed? It's obviously they just bought the website and they're spreading it around. It was also in the email that got sent to people. And you say something like that, just sounding like you know what you're talking about, and who's going to refute it? And other people start to say, well, yeah, you know, how do you explain that? That's a fact. And it becomes a fact very quickly.
The conservative circuit, as you pointed out, the conservative blog circuit really seemed to be passing this around, looking at pointing the finger at the Hillary campaign for doing something evil, which, of course, they didn't do.
Mm-hmm.
And they just seemed to just love that this was just vitriol between both campaigns. And they were just feeding on it, the conservative talk circuit.
If you type Obama hacked into Google now, this is at the very top. You get the Obama site hacked from various websites, blogs, things like that, the raw feed. It was on the Comedy Central blog, even had something, which is kind of funny. That radio station I was talking about, or TV station, I'm not really sure what it is, KXMA in North Dakota. So you can find it on KXMA.com. Apparently, Barack Obama's campaign recently registered the domain hope.net, presumably to finally explain to everyone what we're all supposed to be hoping for. But unfortunately for Obama, the website has been hacked and all the links redirected to Hillary Clinton's campaign website. Funny, though, not exactly what Hillary needs right now. So everybody was sort of paying the price for this one way or another, and it was fun for one and all.
Did any of these people think to call the Obama campaign and see what they said?
I imagine somebody must have, but I didn't see any particular statement from them or any report as to what they might have said. And, you know, all credit to the mass media here. I expected this maybe to get some more. I mean, the KYW thing is something that amazes me, and I'd sure like to hear audio of that. That's incredible. But I thought maybe it would get even further than that, and that there'd have to be retractions and all sorts of other fun things going on. But for the most part, the mass media didn't fall for it. But now that you have all these bloggers, and people really read the blogs, I mean, just seeing it appear on that one blog and then all of a sudden the hits went through the roof tells you that there's a whole other group of people to fool out there or play along with you. So we had a whole bunch of other comments on this. Here's the indecision2008.com. That's a Comedy Central one. They called it Barack Obama's website assassinated, as if we needed another reason to doubt Barack Obama's ability to keep us safe from insomniac Islamofascists. It appears that now he can't even keep his website safe from cyber terrorists. And it goes on like that. All sorts of weirdness. Now, if you look at some of the comments that that were posted, there's a lot of accusations being thrown about as far as who was responsible for this. Now, here's something. Someone was pointing to 2600 Hacker Quarterly, number of related sites sharing the same domain. And then someone else posted in reply to that, I think this is a real hack for two reasons. The contact information lists Bill Burton, who is the Obama campaign manager. I couldn't find any of the information cited above in the current registration, so I suspect those were the previous owners of the domain. I work for an Internet company, and using the tools of the trade, the ownership of this site seems solidly in the Obama camp. Now, you say something like that, who's going to refute it? Number two, I've heard from a number of sources, news groups, an online news report, plus a friend of mine from Allentown, Pennsylvania, that the www.hope.net address was listed on the bottom of the Obama political ads that have been appearing constantly on television in the last 2 or 3 weeks. That would be some feat if the hackers could manage to put a fake web address onto a TV ad. So, I believe the site is definitely one of Obama's. The only question is, do they even know what's going on? I'm amazed they haven't yet fixed it, or at least disabled it. I'm sure they've got their hands full of the campaign, but come on, guys, seriously. I suspect an IT position might be opening soon at Obama headquarters. and after that was posted, people started to agree with it. I mean, that was complete nonsense, complete fiction, but people said, yeah, that sounds authoritative, so I'm going to listen to it. It just makes you realize how easy it is to pull the wool over people's eyes.
Emmanuel?
Yes.
Didn't it appear that the Obama campaign did actually fix the problem, and then they were pushed back again by the Islamofascist hackers?
Well, we actually had three different messages, and in between the three messages, we had the site. I should mention, actually, that over the weekend, the site was directing to Obama's site the whole time. And then after the initial, quote-unquote, hack on Monday, we let it go back to Obama's site as if they had fixed it for a couple of hours. And people were noticing that. People were posting, hey, they've gotten it back. They must have fixed it. And then it got hacked again with a different message. So it was just fun seeing the reaction to it. And then, okay, here's this is my favorite right here. I'm sure it's just a coincidence that a guy by the same name, meaning the name, I think, Bill Burton, the person that the site was registered to, has maxed out his primary donation to Hillary, gone more than halfway to maxing out a general election donation for her, and given a good chunk of dough to the Arkansas Democratic Party as well. And this person went on to blame Clinton for the hack because they found that name in a database without actually checking themselves to realize that guy was a campaign spokesperson for Obama. And that's why that name was in there to start with.
That may be the big news here. The campaign spokesman for Obama is giving all this money to Hillary.
You know what? Maybe. But I looked it up myself, and there was like several people with the same name, so it's entirely possible. Anyway, hopefully everybody got a good laugh out of it. Didn't mean to cause anyone too much grief or concern. Hopefully it landed on everybody just about equally. But I just thought it was amazing how you can take a site that has no connection to anything and make people believe that does something else completely.
Yeah, I got to say, like, when I read a comment saying, like, oh, but I saw this in ABC News,
mm-hmm.
the first thing I thought was, wow, this made it to ABC News right away? And then I was like, oh, wait, that's just a lie.
Yeah, that was my lie.
Yeah, it's definitely you.
Well, you can tell. Okay, so that's the story. That's our April Fool's gag for this year, and hopefully people enjoyed it and didn't confuse anybody too badly. Next year, we've got to think of something even better.
Did you see the flying penguins that the BBC had up?
No, tell us about this.
They had created a video clip with one of the Monty Python guys.
Uh-huh.
That was this science group had gone out and found a group of penguins that could actually fly and wintered in the rainforests of South America. It was quite entertaining.
And that was a lie?
Well, I'm not sure, but it appeared on April 1st.
Okay. Yeah, you know, there are a few things. There was a report yesterday that Al Gore is going to be running for president as an independent, and a lot of people believe that, too, but that turned out to be a gag as well. Also, you know, while we were doing various searches, we also, by the way, to freak everybody out, we were sending mail to HillaryClinton.com with press releases from Barack Obama with the new address at the bottom to get them to go to the address. And at least one of the people, we were doing this from a fake Gmail account that looked like it was an official account, one of the people tried to unsubscribe, sent back mail saying, please unsubscribe me from this. It was just one email, though. But while we were looking for the email addresses inside the HillaryClinton.com domain, and you can find them just by Googling, we kept going page by page through Google searches. And eventually, after you do this about 20 times, and I never had this happen before because I never went that deep into Google, you get this page called Google Error. We're sorry, but your query looks similar to automated requests from a computer virus or spyware application. To protect our users, we can't process your request right now. We'll restore your access as quickly as possible, so try again soon. In the meantime, if you suspect that your computer or network has been infected, you might want to run a virus checker or spyware removal with links. to make sure that your systems are free of viruses and other spurious software. If you're continually receiving this error, you may be able to resolve the problem by deleting your Google cookie and revisiting Google. For browser-specific instructions, please consult your browser's online support center. And then to continue searching, please type the characters you see below. Don't you hate it when they give you those characters and you really can't read them because they're so jumbled together? Or an R could be an N and you don't really know for sure and you get it wrong and you feel like an idiot?
No.
Oh, well, I hate when that happens. And it happens more than I would expect it to happen. Okay, enough about that. Other things that have been going on this week. Mike, you have something involving Germans and fingerprints and things.
Yeah, this is not a joke. The CCC, the Chaos Computer Club, has published in the latest edition of the Datenschleuder, which is their magazine, a replica of the fingerprints of Wolfgang Schäuble, who's the German Home Secretary, who's the man behind a lot of the more invasive security surveillance measures that are starting to appear in Germany, have already appeared all over the world, but they're making their way to Germany. And apparently he once drank something out of a glass or something, and the owners of the glass were very careful to preserve it and give it to someone in the CCC. So now if you pick up a copy of the issue, you'll be able to convince biometric identification systems that you, in fact, are the German Interior Minister, which might be fun.
Definitely. Wow. Has he commented on this at all?
He himself has not, but the office says they weren't concerned. For years, it has been known that fingerprints can be obtained from glass, a spokesperson told Heise Online, which is a German IT publication.
Mm-hmm.
The spokesperson said that the CCC's action does not call the concept of electronic passports into question. They, however, would not confirm or deny whether the fingerprint was actually Wolfgang Schäuble.
You know, if everybody sort of joined forces on something like this, it wouldn't be too hard. Imagine that you wanted to get the fingerprint to George W. Bush. Now, he goes to various places, goes to restaurants and things like that. If it's just one worker in a place where he has visited, in a diner or something like that, just gets their eyes onto a glass that he's touched and saves it and dusts it later, then we'd have that information. It'd be very, very simple. If people did that every time a politician went out into the public arena, I think you might see a different kind of reaction towards all this fascination with getting fingerprints as security measures.
There's also the CCC published in 2004, but it's newly popular,
mm-hmm.
a 10-step guide for how to copy fingerprints. And there's some nice pictures of people's fingerprints on Club Mata bottles and stuff.
Oh, really? And iris scans, too? I'm sure you could probably get that.
Probably. They're not in the same document, but maybe mm-hmm. a different document.
This is one thing we've learned over the years, is that authorities hate it when you use the same tactics on them that they use on people. They absolutely hate it. Bernie, you learned that with the Secret Service. They don't like when their pictures are taken, but they love taking our pictures.
Very true.
Yeah. Okay, hackers in the news, and I put hackers in quotes, and maybe I should put news in quotes too. A hacker gets prison for false 9/11 report, or 911 report, rather, not the day, the phone number. A Washington state computer hacker who misled police with a wild tale of threats and a possible murder scenario pleaded guilty Wednesday in Orange County Superior Court. Randall Ellis of Mocatillo, Washington, was charged with computer access fraud, false imprisonment by violence, falsely reporting a crime, and assault with a firearm, sentenced to 3 years in prison, ordered to pay $14,765 in restitution. $14,000 will go to the Orange County Sheriff Department to recover the cost of the investigation, as well as the SWAT team, which was dispatched as a result of Ellis's actions. The remaining amount, $765, is slated for the city of Mocatillo, Washington, to cover the cost of the search warrant and arrest. That's what a search warrant and arrest cost, apparently, $765. Nice to know that.
It's pretty cheap.
It's not bad. Yeah. I might get a couple. Sheriff Sergeant Mike McHenry, who credits lead investigator Brian Sims for his diligent work in following the case, was pleased to hear that Ellis pleaded guilty. "There needs to be significant punishment," said McHenry. "There was grave risk to the people involved and the deputies who responded. This wasn't a simple prank call. It was elaborate, thought out, and scripted to elicit significant armed response and endanger the lives of everyone involved." Now, it was almost a year ago, March 29, 2007. Actually, it was more than a year ago now. Ellis began his swatting call. This is what they call it, swatting, by reporting a drug overdose. The call came into the Orange County Fire Authority. The sheriff's department was asked to assist. His hoax twisted and turned as patrol cars and fire department paramedics rolled to the home of a Lake Forest couple and their two toddlers. The caller changed stories from reporting a drug overdose to talking about shooting and killing his sister after she fired a shot at him. With law enforcement fearing the worst, the Lake Forest home was surrounded by patrol cars, and et cetera. It goes on from there. They realized it was a hoax when they found no signs of anything the caller had reported, and his plot was completed by using a service provider on the Internet. It didn't take a lot of technical hacking skills, they say. All it required was knowledge of certain services that he used for the wrong purpose. I hope this deters other people emulating Mr. Ellis. I would hope they would think twice before engaging in cyber terrorism. Now, interesting story. And of course, I don't think anyone's going to argue that this guy's a dimwit and deserves to be punished for putting everyone's lives in jeopardy. And he really did do that. But what's this got to do with hacking? Obviously, they call him a computer hacker. Then they say that it doesn't take any hacking ability or skill. It just basically takes a bit of a moronic attitude and knowledge of how to use a service, I suppose. Does that make you a hacker?
Apparently a hacker and a cyber terrorist.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Does it say how they caught him?
How did they catch him? Probably they traced something. Let's see if it's... No, I don't think they say that. But I'm sure once they realized that this guy was up to something like this, it probably wasn't that difficult. But look, we know that it cost, what, $765 for him to find him or to serve the warrant and track him down?
Emmanuel?
Yes.
It's really interesting sometimes. It's public information. Whenever there's a case like this, to read the indictment, you can usually even contact the authority that charged whoever you're interested in finding out how they did something or how they were caught. Usually the indictments are online, and you can read the whole investigative process and what went, you know, how they determined someone was their suspect.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting reading sometimes, especially these terrorist cases where you read about how someone was determined to be a terrorist in the eyes of the prosecutor. It's really interesting reading the indictments, and if you read between the lines, you realize that it's really a window into the mind of a prosecutor.
Now, this is the same swatting case that I'm thinking of, since there are several things going on right now. The person was caught because he was recording the phone calls that he was using or making to these police departments, because the caller ID spoofing service allows you to record your own call and saves it on their servers. So I'm assuming that the police department figured out which company and just access account and listen to all these calls.
Yeah, probably something like that.
Is this a word now, swatting?
Apparently it is. It's a new word out there.
It's a new buzzword.
Swatting. You know, I really hope that this doesn't catch on in any community, and I sure hope the hacker community doesn't get associated with this in any way. This is just stupidity. I mean, you know, prank calls have always existed. That's one thing. They can be funny. They can be stupid. But this... there is no redeeming quality to this whatsoever. Having someone's home invaded by cops or surrounded by SWAT teams, it's the equivalent of calling in a false alarm fires or sending cops on wild goose chases where they could kill people or other people won't get cops when they need them or something like that. It's not funny, not good. And hopefully that message will be sent. Now, here's something else, hackers in the news, again, in quotes, from Fox News. Website hacking has reached a new low, both morally and technically. Unknown miscreants had a good time 2 weekends ago when they posted hundreds of flashing animated images onto discussion boards hosted by the Landover, Maryland-based Epilepsy Foundation. Flashing lights or bold moving patterns can trigger often violent seizures among 3% of the estimated 50 million epileptics worldwide. I was on the phone when it happened, and I couldn't move and I couldn't speak, said Ryan Fultz, who has epilepsy. This came from Wired. She reported that that was her reaction viewing the images on March 23rd. Her 11-year-old son walked over and closed the browser window after about 10 seconds. Fortunately, she suffered nothing more than a bad headache. By then, the second day of vandalism on epilepsyfoundation.org, the jerks, can you believe that's what a news report refers to them, just as jerks like that? The jerks had moved on.
Is this the Post?
This is the Fox News. Fox News is saying this.
Same thing.
Yeah, but come on. That is just not at all journalistic to call someone jerks. It just isn't. Anyway, the jerks had moved on to hijacking the browsers of anyone who clicked on certain forum posts, filling the screen with bright flashing colors. Now, technically, again, none of this was hacking. It's great. They say it. They even say it in their story, even though they refer to it as hacking a few paragraphs above and in the headline. None of this was hacking. It didn't involve breaking into anyone's website. And that's not hacking either. Apparently, Fox News' definition of hacking is breaking into someone's website. Incredible. And the journalistic excellence continues here. Any snotty kid with a rudimentary knowledge of JavaScript could do it. This isn't a quote. This is the news report. The Epilepsy Foundation shut off the discussion board on Sunday for about 12 hours, and the attack stopped. So all this was somebody posting to a discussion board, posting flashing lights to a discussion.
They just posted like an animated GIF of something flashing?
Yeah.
All right.
And yeah, I didn't see it myself. I wonder if that was the intent, if they just maybe posted something not realizing that would have that reaction, or if they said, this is the reaction that we wish to achieve.
Posting something really flashy to an epilepsy foundation probably might be intentional.
Well, it's possible. It's possible. Some people, you'd be amazed at what people don't think of.
They should just disable pictures.
Yeah, it's not that hard. We can show them how to do that. Yes, Bernie.
It's interesting to note that the BBC in the UK, for their television channels, they have very well-defined standards on what kind of flashing you can have on a BBC TV channel. And it's pretty interesting. I read you can just do you can just Google BBC flashing and video and find what these standards are. And there's certain flash rates that are verboten you can't have on BBC television. Or if you're going to, you have to have a warning ahead of time just beforehand that if you're epileptic, be aware this flashing is about to happen. But the FCC doesn't have any such requirements for flashing on American TV channels.
From what I understand, this was actually an organized attack on the forum where multiple people posted these all over the place and then tried to play it off as the anonymous group that's been...
Oh, not them again. Every time somebody does something anonymously, it's going to be this anonymous group of people.
I think that was the intent.
It's as annoying as people use the word alternative in music and claim that's a musical genre.
But it is.
Anonymous people. It's anonymous people. It's not an anonymous organized group.
I think that was the point, was to play it off the anonymous versus Scientology. Anonymous.
Let's blame Scientology there. All right, whatever. Now, data loss of the week should be a new feature for us. Advance Auto Parts said on Monday a network intrusion had exposed credit card, debit card, and checking account information for up to 56,000 customers. This is small. Usually, I thought the rule was we only do 100,000 or over data loss.
Weren't we supposed to have a theme song for this?
Yeah, we're working on that. We have several different features, and we're working on theme songs. But yeah, 56,000 customers, small potatoes. It was the subject of a criminal investigation. Now, the auto parts retailer said 14 of its stores, including locations in Georgia, Ohio, Louisiana, Tennessee, Mississippi, Indiana, Virginia, and New York, have been affected. The company said it was conducting its own investigation and cooperating in a criminal probe of the matter by state and federal agencies. Now, Advance Auto Parts did not specify in a statement how customer financial information had been exposed or how access had been gained to its network. And I think they kind of owe us that bit of information. An Advance Auto Parts spokeswoman said the Roanoke, Virginia-based retailer was not aware of any fraudulent transactions on customer accounts as a result of the breach of its computer network. Well, it's been 2 days, so I guess nothing's going to happen, right? Actually, this happened on Monday, so that's the end of March, so earlier in March. Two grocery store chains owned by Belgium-based Delhaize Group reported that credit card and debit card numbers had been stolen, resulting in reports of some 1,800 fraudulent purposes. So, yeah, and here we go again. Let's blame the hackers. U.S. retail group TJX Cos, Inc. disclosed last year that data from 45.7 million credit and debit cards was stolen by hackers over a period of 18 months. So now you know who to blame, at least. Unreal. We have this bit of information, which I think is really interesting, about the... kind of related to the RNC, Republican National Convention, in 2004 in New York. Now, when this event took place, a lot of us subscribed to a service on our mobile phones called TextMob, TextMob, widely used by demonstrators, reporters, even police officers, definitely police officers. And what is happening now as part of the ongoing lawsuits against the city for the people who are detained illegally, The city is now demanding the records of this company, of the company TexMob.
It's not a company.
Well, it's a guy, right? This Tad Hirsch guy?
Tad, yeah.
Yeah. He's a doctoral candidate at MIT. He wrote the code that created TexMob. I mean, they're treating it sort of like a company, I guess, the way they're demanding records. I mean, I don't know what kind of records he could possibly keep, but they want to know who, I guess, who subscribed to it, the phone numbers of everybody who was receiving these messages, and what messages are being sent, right? Is that the gist of it?
Yeah, it's not explicitly specified, but they imagine they also want to know who sent which message.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and these messages would tell you that certain streets were closed off, that police were arresting people over here. It was a good way, definitely a good way, as somebody who was out reporting on the scene, a good way to know where things were happening. And unfortunately, they didn't warn us about East 16th Street, but I think word came out after they had already arrested us there. It was a good demonstration of how text messaging could be used to communicate with a lot of people and tell them what was going on. I don't know of any instance where it was used in a bad way, as in begin riot here and start destroying things. That didn't happen. Now. They're demanding all kinds of records from him, and I imagine that that this is being resisted, right?
Yes, he's got a lawyer, David Rankin, who's pretty mm-hmm. good.
Now, according to the New York Times, it's difficult to know for sure who received messages, but an examination of police surveillance documents prepared in 2003 and 2004, those are the ones that were unsealed by a federal magistrate last year. In fact, I think those are the ones that had us in them, that said the Hope conference was where things were being planned out across the street from the garden. Those surveillance documents make it clear the authorities were aware of TexMob at least a month before the Republican convention began. A document marked NYPD secret, dated July 26, 2004, included the address of the TexMob website, wow, and stated it is anticipated that text messaging is one of several different communication systems that will be utilized to organize the upcoming RNC protests. Other systems included telephones, internet posts, and human speech.
Human?
Yeah, people talking directly, like making a direct connection. You have to be fairly close, though.
Is that allowed?
They should subpoena that.
I don't know what the new laws are, but it's definitely something that the authorities are concerned about. Also, something else authorities are concerned about, Pirate Bay 4, the four people involved in operating the file-sharing site, the Pirate Bay, record companies are demanding that they pay $2.5 million in compensatory damages. And Pirate Bay founder Gottfried Svartholm Warg, and I'm sorry if I'm mangling your name, it's just not every day I get a name like that, said to the Swedish newspaper that I'm quoting, "The record companies can go screw themselves." I like people in Sweden. They're so direct in what they have to say, and he certainly said it there. In addition to Svartholm Wag, fellow Pirate Bay founders Fredrik Nijg, Peter Sund, and Carl Lundström have been indicted for being accessories to breaking copyright law. The indictment covers 24 music albums, 9 films, and 4 computer games. "As usual, we're not too concerned," said Svartholm Wag of the new demand for damages. "He has already been in touch with the others accused in the case, all of whom found the claim rather amusing. We mostly laughed at it," he said. Now, in calculating the damages claim, record companies counted the number of times the 24 albums were illegally downloaded, according to a preliminary investigation. On top of that, the companies are demanding general compensation because the copyright owners didn't give permission for the downloading. The damages now being demanded are based on the albums which the prosecutor has included in his indictment, the injury to the record companies, the artists, and the copyright holders caused by the Pirate Bay's illegal activity is many times greater, said Lars Gustafsson, head of the Swedish chapter of the International Federation of the Phonographic Institute, the IFPI. But Svartholm Wag didn't have much faith in the record company's calculations, which he claimed were based on multiplying the retail price for the album by the number of times it was downloaded. "Their numbers are pure fantasy," he said. It doesn't appear as if the record companies have much of a strategy at all. This comes from the local Sweden's English newspaper. And it's interesting. Pirate Bay there.
Yeah, the record industry and the movie industry have really been trying for quite some time to get the Pirate Bay shut down, and they have yet to succeed. It appears that the Pirate Bay is legal under Swedish law, and they really don't like that.
But I mentioned I do like the Swedes. I really do.
They also have a pirate political party, the Pirate Party.
The Pirate Party? They got a political party, these guys.
I mean, it's not quite the same people, but I imagine they're good friends.
And the thing is, they could probably have a realistic expectation of being somehow represented in Parliament.
See, they didn't win any seats in the election, but they did get some of the more mainstream political parties to actually take a profile-sharing stance, which is something that doesn't happen in the United States.
And file-sharing does not have to mean piracy. It does not have to mean stealing from people. There are all sorts of ways of adapting your expectations and moving with the technology. And
it's a remarkable tool that people are using for various purposes.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's all kinds. You just use your imagination. And I'm sure this will be discussed more at the HOPE conference and this weekend at Nauticon in Cleveland. By the way, I guess we should mention folks interested in going to Nauticon this weekend, go to Nauticon, NOTACON.org, and registration information is there. And if you happen to live in Cleveland, maybe we'll see you. We'll be at the 2600 meeting, I believe, on Friday, assuming that's happening, because the conference is also happening at the same time. But I intend to try and scope it out and see. Lexicon, you were at CarolinaCon. Tell us about CarolinaCon. We mentioned it last week.
We had some great speakers and had over 100 people show up this time, which was a record for CarolinaCon. It's kind of a super meeting for the North Carolina 2600 groups, but we also had people show up from California and Pennsylvania and South Carolina, Georgia. So
Very nice.
Lot of fun.
In New York.
I like the small conferences. In North Carolina.
People from New York, I understand,
and,
went.
Well, yeah, I went down, so yes.
He's from North Carolina, though, originally, so I don't know if that even counts. But the New Yorkers come from New York.
We had other people from Brooklyn down there, yeah.
Good. You mentioned 2600 meetings in North Carolina.
Yeah, we have a pretty strong standing. We have a site, forum.nc2600.org, where a lot of people congregate and talk. And it's a pretty tight group of people who actually go to the meetings and hang out together. And
that's good.
Yeah.
That's good to see the communities that are all different parts of the world, actually. And they're all different. And it's just cool to see that. So congratulations on CarolinaCon, and hopefully Nauticon will be cool as well. And, of course, let's not forget Hope.net, which if you go to Hope.net, it will go to the right site now. It will not go to Obama. It will go to us. And you can find out all sorts of information about that. And you'll be seeing more information posted as the weeks go by now that we have no other pranks to pull that we're going to tell you about. Now, here's something that I found a bit disturbing. We're going to take some phone calls, 212-209-2900. But a couple of stories here about the FBI. This one in particular, having to do with FBI wiretaps on Martin Luther King Jr. Way back. Now, an interesting viewpoint on all of this, according to Pulitzer Prize-winning scholar David Garrow, who is a leading civil rights scholar, FBI wiretaps have given us the most powerful and persuasive source of all for seeing how utterly selfless Martin Luther King was. You see him being intensely self-critical. King really and truly believed that he was there to be of service to others. This was not a man with any egomaniacal joy of being a famous person or being a leader. Now, the FBI kept the civil rights leader under constant surveillance, hoping to prove that he was under the influence of communists. Yeah, no kidding. And the way that this is being viewed now is that having somebody under constant surveillance actually can sometimes reveal their true nature and show how full of nonsense the people who are trying to discredit him, how full of nonsense they actually are. And while that's interesting, it's also very scary that people actually would think that, yeah, okay, I have nothing to hide, or at least nothing significant to hide, and by watching me all the time, that will become proven. I think it sort of gets away from the horror of having to deal with the fact that we're under surveillance all the time. Am I overreacting? Yes, Bernie.
It's probably noteworthy that, one, that Bobby Kennedy actually requested the FBI wiretap Martin Luther King Jr., but also I don't think the FBI was really interested in any positive information spoken by King during those tapped telephone conversations. I think they're only looking to getting any kind of personal dirt or anything else to use to discredit him, because at one point I believe the FBI described him as, the most dangerous black man in America.
Incredible. And, yeah, as you say, Kennedy gave the FBI permission to break into King's office and home to install the bugs as long as agents recognize the, quote, delicacy of this particular matter, unquote, and didn't get caught installing them. Kennedy added a proviso. He wanted to be personally informed of any pertinent information. It's simply unbelievable that these things happen and continue to happen. Now, here's another story involving the FBI. This just happened yesterday. A man who was accused of trying to board an Air Jamaica flight at Orlando International Airport with apparent bomb-making materials was taken into custody yesterday. Officials said Kevin Brown, a Jamaican national, was acting strangely and caught the attention of an air safety officer at the Florida airport. Now, this officer was known as a behavior identification officer, and this guy was acting kind of strangely. Apparently, these officers are trained to watch for any kind of suspicious behavior. When people are doing things that are deceptive, they exhibit behaviors that are involuntary, the spokesperson for this program said. Our officers are very well trained to identify these behaviors. Now, you know, it's interesting to, obviously, if you see somebody acting strangely, you should follow them and look at them and see what they're up to. But the fact that there are people out there doing nothing but looking for deceptive type of behavior, that kind of scares me.
What if they're doing something deceptive not related to bringing down an airplane?
Thank you.
Like,
yes.
You know, they're cheating on their partner or something.
Yes. What if you're in town to have an affair and you're looking all shifty-eyed? Is that an excuse to be tackled by TSA authorities and questioned and all that kind of thing, put on CNN? I mean, are they looking for any kind of deceptive behavior, or just can they somehow tell that it's airplane related?
So that's a warning to all TV gun owners. Because, like, you know, what are they talking about? What's deceptive? But anyway, yeah, so, like, when I'm at the airport, I'm always TV gunning. And, like, that's pretty deceptive because, I walk around aimlessly and, like, you know, with something in my hand.
Well, I'll be in an airport tomorrow. I could try and think deceptively, you know, thought crime. Maybe that'll do it.
I don't really know what they look for.
Well, what am I talking? I always get searched anyway, so it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, well, maybe they look for the long hair, whatever. But, you know, when I'm in an airport, I'm usually by myself, and I usually just wander around. Like, that's kind of weird.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't I ever get jumped?
We'll work on it, Arseny. We'll get you the help you need to get noticed in the airports. All right, 212-209-2900. Our phone lines are open. This is Off the Hook, the program about technology and hackers and all sorts of other fun things. Let's see who's out there. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Yeah, what happened to the oversexed, drugged up artist?
All right. You know, I don't know where you're going with that sentence, but I didn't like the way it started, so I'm going to start over here. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Yes. I'd like to mention.
Yeah, no, I don't like that one either. I'm sorry. I don't mean to be abrupt, but I just you call every single time. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hey, how you doing?
Hi. You sound like a.
I had a quick question.
Yes.
A couple of weeks ago, you had mentioned something along the lines of a the different things that you could do with the U.S. Post Office mail forwarding site, and there was absolutely no security whatsoever. Has that changed?
It has not changed, as far as I know. I tested it out, and I got this, I believe I read it last week, this notice saying that my mail would not be delivered for a week. But the funny thing is, it was delivered. So apparently, I think, Mike, you're the one who told me that, yes, in fact, the system doesn't actually work.
Right.
Top
now,
everything else.
Now, here's another thing.
Yes.
Now, of course, you know, anyone with any know-how can get into a computer if you have physical access to a computer. But let's say you're not that savvy and you have a Dell computer, now, as opposed to, say, an IBM. The reason is I would make this distinction is, let's say an IBM, you want to, when it boots up, it says press enter to enter, you know, a boot mode or something. But you can't actually erase anything unless you log in. And if you can't log in, you got to still put in a password when you go into the, the low-level, rewrite of the hard disk. You know, all computers, if they're bad enough, you can go back to their factory settings, in essence. But a Dell computer, you just have to know the keystroke. You can find that in the manual. There's no password needed. If you're like a cleaning person in a big company, you could basically go to all the computers and reset them into factory mode without logging in.
I've heard this said about that.
I mean, isn't that kind of silly? It's not as silly as the post office thing, but I mean, anyone that doesn't even want to try to log in with passwords or crack a computer can just basically wreak havoc on a major company, lose all your stuff.
Absolutely, absolutely. So always trust your cleaning staff. I think that's the first thing to say.
You can disable this feature.
How do you disable it?
The way I did it is you just overwrite the partition on which the backup data is stored. I'm sure there's some other way.
How many people got to know to do that, though?
I don't know. Yeah, if it's a big company, it should have IT staff that knows.
Yeah, you'd think.
No.
You'd think. All right.
I would think. I'd be wrong, but I still would think.
All right. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hi. You might be interested to know that when we dial your number, it starts ringing. It often suddenly goes silent, and you're no longer ringing the number.
Yeah, that's the phone company saying you're not spending any money yet, so therefore we're going to cut you off and hope that you call something more expensive.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Didn't used to be that way.
Okay. Well, I was wondering, you were talking about your April Fool's joke earlier, but you were so oblique, I never quite figured out what exactly the joke was.
Well, the joke was that a site was hacked that didn't actually belong to the people, supposedly got hacked or that supposedly did the hack. Basically, it was our own site. The idea was to get people to somehow believe that our site was actually the official site for a campaign, which is completely false and untrue, but it was amazing to see how many people actually just bought into it.
And what exactly did you do to your own site to make people think it was hacked? What was the thing that Obama's campaign wouldn't have wanted to have happened to their own site that you did to yours?
Basically put a message. Well, first of all, we had the image from Barack Obama's site, and then we had text suddenly appear over it saying basically this site has been hacked, there's no security, blah, 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 and the kind of thing you'd see on a rather juvenile type of page. Now, a lot of people got it right away. A lot of people understood. In fact, some people even traced all the disinformation that was being spread around in various forums, and that was I was impressed with the level of expertise many people showed. But it was also funny to see the story actually start showing up on Republican news sites as further proof that the Democrats are at each other's throats, and it just made everybody seem a little bit silly, and I think that's sort of the purpose of the day.
But it never actually got picked up by any of the major news streams.
Bernie, you said it was on KYW, right?
I heard it once. It might have been mentioned more than once, but I kept listening. Typically, KYW has a news cycle, like every half hour they repeat the same news over and over and over again. I heard it once.
And it's funny how news stories sometimes just disappear. When they realize they're wrong, they just erase it. It never happened. And we learned a lot about that.
And they don't say, we're sorry. We inadvertently disinformation.
You can't do that. You can't admit that you're wrong.
Well, don't reputable news organizations do that as a point of pride?
They used to. I don't know if they still do.
I've seen it happen exactly once. Recently.
Really? What?
The German Newsweekly published, they have an English site, and they published this article about IKEA that turned out to be totally wrong. And a few days later, they published a note saying, the article we published the other day was totally wrong, sorry.
Uh-huh. So things like CNN, they don't do that sort of thing?
I don't think so. I very rarely see it.
That is shocking.
Yeah, it is. You know, it's a bit silly. It was a bit funny in some regards, but also I think there are some serious lessons to be learned here about how news gets to be news. And we read a lot of stories, and we don't know how they actually get to be news.
Well, it's also interesting that in telling your joke, you omitted to tell exactly what the joke was.
Well, the joke was that the site was hacked, but it wasn't their site that got hacked. I mean, basically, just fooling people thinking that this site belonged to them when it didn't. That was pretty much the point of it.
Yeah, but I'm just saying that when you were telling about it, you were telling him about it with omitting the main punchline.
Okay, well, I'm glad you got us to include it this time. Thanks for your call. We're going to try and take one or two more in the brief time we have left. And good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Greetings.
What's up?
Not too much. I want to make 2 points about biometric security. First, and second, negative land.
Okay, make it quick.
One of the major things that people are against biometric security as, you know, primary identifier is that once it's spread around or compromised through similar website hack or whatever, database theft, it can't be revoked. You can't, like, change your fingerprints. Second thing is that the band negative land, they released some small, tiny press release saying, oh, well, our tour has been canceled due to ongoing FBI investigations. That was a complete fabrication.
What tour? They have a tour?
Well, I don't know. It was a long time ago. It was, I believe, the late 90s.
Oh, okay. I thought they were back touring again. I'd love to see them.
But that got picked up and spread around and appeared in someone's zine, and then somebody from a radio station or a news station wanted to interview them. They wanted to know about this FBI investigation and blah, blah, blah. So
okay.
That probably bears a little bit more research, but another example.
All right. Well, thanks thanks for letting us know. And
glad I got through.
All right. All right. Thanks. Thanks for calling. Thanks for listening. And that's going to pretty much do it for us here tonight on this edition of Off the Hook. And, of course, 2600 meetings coming up this Friday. All around the world, go to 2600.com/meetings for information. See you all at Nauticon. And as for all our friends down in Mexico, let's hope things get a little bit more sane down there. Take care. Good night.
Sentir la soledad, mi peor error fue haber aceptado mi fealdad. Porque ahora ya no tengo donde esconder el miedo, y el miedo sigue vivo, se la vive aquí conmigo. Yo me baso en la apariencia con placer y sin conciencia, esperando que algún día tu atención fije en mí. Es por eso que ahora digo así, quiero ser el
great music here at the WBAI. What's the name of that show?
Off the Hook.
Hook. These guys are.